Ana Cervantes destaca la importancia de mantener esas fuerzas en las comunidades víctimas del crimen organizado.
El envío masivo de tropas que se acaba de dar es porque en los últimos años se ha incrementado el número de homicidios. Es importante mantener en estos lugares la presencia, una fuerte presencia de las Fuerzas Armadas para así ir en detrimento de las actividades militares, pero también se debe de reforzar con políticas públicas que fomenten el desarrollo de las comunidades que son más afectadas por el crimen organizado y que mejoren la calidad de vida de las personas que habitan en dichas comunidades. La política de abrazos no balazos se busca la desmilitarización del país, que se llevó a cabo durante los gobiernos anteriores, y el gobierno actual lo que busca es, mediante políticas públicas que fomenten el desarrollo social de las comunidades más marginadas, es decir, a través de dar becas a estudiantes, dar pensiones a adultos mayores, crear programas sociales como Sembrando Vida. Se busca el desarrollo de estas comunidades rurales para así alejar a los habitantes de las mismas de ingresar a las filas del crimen organizado.
Más noticias de México. El gobierno actual ha decidido agarrar el toro por los cuernos y avanzar una reforma energética que permita al país controlar su energía. Eduardo Martínez reporta.
Es muy polémico debido a que se estarían tocando muchos intereses, sobre todo de grandes firmas extranjeras que han invertido en este país y que también se han beneficiado mucho por las utilidades que recuperan de sus operaciones en territorio mexicano. El día de hoy ya las autoridades del Congreso mexicano han dado a conocer que se extiende durante una semana más el Parlamento Abierto que iniciaron a principios de este mes para discutir y que distintos sectores fueran a la Cámara de Diputados a expresar sus puntos de vista en cuanto se refiere a la iniciativa que envió el presidente Andrés Manuel López Obrador para reformar la ley en materia de electricidad. Esto ocurrió el 1 de octubre y desde entonces lo que ha venido es una defensa por parte del gobierno, pero también enfrenta pues todos los argumentos que desde los puntos de vista de la oposición dicen estaría afectando esa reforma a México y también a sus inversiones. Sin embargo, por el otro lado, el presidente señala que de lo que se trata es de lograr tarifas justas y que además también quede en manos del Estado mexicano un sector muy importante, no solamente para la economía nacional, sino también en temas de seguridad. En esa situación se encuentra ahora mismo esta reforma en materia eléctrica que ha merecido que en menos de 30 días dos funcionarios de alto nivel de Estados Unidos vengan a México para que se discuta y también conversar con el presidente Andrés Manuel López Obrador sobre este tema en particular. Estamos hablando de la visita primero de la secretaria de Energía de Estados Unidos, Jen Granholm, quien vino a México con ese objetivo, y el día de ayer que estuvo aquí en territorio mexicano, John Kerry, el enviado para los temas del clima de la Casa Blanca, quien el día de ayer declaraba que esperaban que México lograra una reforma eléctrica con un mercado abierto y competitivo. Sin embargo, su mayor preocupación se centra en las inversiones que tienen empresas estadounidenses en territorio mexicano y también porque hay una cláusula muy relevante que está en discusión y que tiene que ver con el artículo 28 de la Constitución y que se refiere a que el litio, la industria del litio, quedará en manos del Estado mexicano y no podrá explotarse por parte de empresas privadas. El presidente López Obrador señaló que no habrá concesiones para empresas internacionales que quieran venir a operar en el tema del litio. Esa es una de las mayores preocupaciones, porque no podemos dejar de lado que para 2030 Estados Unidos se ha propuesto que el 50% de los vehículos que circulen por sus calles sean eléctricos. ¿Esto qué necesita? Pues necesita un mineral como el litio para poder desarrollar las baterías y toda la situación que se requiere para poder echar a andar esos vehículos. Cabe destacar también que en el sector eléctrico, ahora mismo dominado por empresas españolas, está también el tema que el día de ayer el presidente puso en la palestra pública y que tiene que ver con las relaciones que existen entre México y España, que ahora mismo no atraviesan por su mejor momento. Y es que el presidente López Obrador el día de ayer hacía un llamado a poner una pausa en las relaciones bilaterales.
Lo que dije ayer es: vamos, por el bien de nuestros pueblos, a tener una pausa. No hablé de ruptura, no. Dice: vamos a serenar la relación, que ya no se está pensando de que se va a saquear a México impunemente. Ya eso pasó, es una falta de respeto, deberían de ofrecer hasta disculpa. No lo han hecho, no importa, pero vamos a entrar a una etapa nueva, despacio, y repito, no es ruptura.
Esto fue interpretado de muchísimas formas y el día de hoy el presidente López Obrador en su conferencia matutina lo aclaraba y señalaba que hablar de una pausa no es hablar de ruptura. Sin embargo, ha señalado que sí, las empresas españolas, las grandes empresas, han venido a México a tener privilegios y también a cometer abusos en contra de la población en contubernio con los gobiernos de corte neoliberal que le precedieron. Esto dijo el presidente, no puede seguir así, y es ahí donde ha dicho el mandatario que se debe poner una pausa y bajar de tono las relaciones entre México y España. En el caso del sector eléctrico, puedo decirte que las empresas españolas tienen una importante participación en el mercado eléctrico, y además la reforma energética en materia de electricidad también señala que el mercado de generación eléctrica tendrá que quedar 56% en manos de la estatal Comisión Federal de Electricidad y el 44% restante en manos de las empresas privadas. Esto, por supuesto, no ha gustado a los grandes conglomerados de energéticos del mundo, y por eso es que también hay muchísimos señalamientos en contra de esa iniciativa que el presidente pretende que se apruebe en esta misma legislatura que culminará en el mes de septiembre. Así la situación en torno a esta reforma en materia de electricidad, y por supuesto todavía queda un camino bastante largo por seguir en este tema, porque ahora está el Parlamento abierto, pero también viene la discusión en las comisiones de la Cámara de Diputados.
And now it's time for another edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. It's going to be the May 4th, 2023 edition. However, we are flashing back to February 16th, 1996, because your poor overworked host here is trying to be less overworked. And this is kind of just a very brief introduction. On the contemporary scene, I want people to be aware that tomorrow, up to 5 o'clock, is the last time you're going to be able to register with the coastal commissions and oppose the oversized vehicle ordinance, which the city is trying to, I wouldn't say sneak through, but slide through, with, unfortunately, the consent of the local enforcement division of the Coastal Commission, which is actually hand in glove or head up ass in collusion with the city itself, trying to accommodate the city while essentially ignoring the needs of the poor folks and the folks who live in their RVs. We were able to beat this back twice last summer, and then also back in 2015 or 2016 when I appealed it, and it was pushed by another reactionary council member, Rochelle Noroyan. So I encourage you to get online and to go to the Coastal Commission website, look up California Coastal Commission. It'll send you there. Then you go to, once you reach the site, you go to the, you click on agendas, and then you go to the Thursday session. You'll be presented with three different days, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. You go to Thursday's session, and it is item 12B, I believe, double-checking. Yeah, application for oversized vehicle parking restrictions. And you click on the public comment, but you must do this before Friday, 5 p.m. That's Friday, May 5th. That's tomorrow, if you're listening to this on the normal broadcast time of the 4th. So do that. Write your concerns. And, of course, the OVO, the problem with it is it discriminates against homeless people and is really a thinly veiled attempt to get homeless people out of town while not really providing necessary accommodations and impacting severely the diversity of town, the justice with which homeless people are treated who have no option but to live in their vehicles, since the city itself admits it cannot accommodate a majority of the homeless folks generally. And I would say it also can't accommodate a majority of the folks in their vehicles, though I don't have the stats to back that up. Well, we were derelict in not getting enough surveying done, but then again, the city didn't present documentation of the numbers of homeless people in RVs either. They just went on simply flat assertion. We're the city, we say this, you should do it. And they got the Coastal Commission's local go-to boys to go for that, as they did before. But the Coastal Commission saw through it, particularly with the help of the ACLU and the Disability Rights Coalition and Reggie Meisler. So go to do the website, support the rights of folks. It might be someone you know soon, if it isn't already, who live in their vehicles. And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's the Thursday edition of Bathurst Pier's Broadsides with updates on new policies at the Homeless Services Center, thanks to Executive Director Monica Martinez. Some older interviews, and who knows, your calls, plus hopefully a call in from Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, and another from the Orlando attorney who is handling the Orlando Food Not Bombs arrests. Stay tuned.
that was Sarah Marlowe, A World to Win, When Will the Madness End? You are tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, or Freak Radio Santa Cruz, depending on how you want to put it. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, twice weekly show you're listening to that I do on Thursdays and Sundays around homeless, civil rights, and other local issues. I guess last Sunday we did the smart meter debate. Today we're expecting calls from Orlando, Florida on food not bombs and the attack on the homeless through the attack on their food providers or food servers. They're going to trial next week, and an attorney named Cheyenne is going to be defending a bunch of them. And I talked to him, I guess it was yesterday or the day before. I'm hoping he will be calling in. I'm thinking he will be. And I guess we should be hearing from him around 7, in about an hour, I believe. Let me double check that. 6:30, actually. Around 7, Katzenjammer Keith McHenry, as I call him, calls in. He doesn't call himself that. I call him that because of his playful attitude, his good humor, even in the face of brutality, repression, and total lack of humor by those who wish to silence him or discredit him throughout, well, whether it's in San Francisco or Orlando, Florida, or wherever it is. A fine activist who's been working at issues around human rights and the poor for 30 years now and continues to work there. So in case you want to call in and be a part of the show, and that can involve reports on what's happening on the street, particularly concerned with police misconduct in Santa Cruz, or good stories about how police have been helping the community. If you have some particular to report there, that would be great. Give a call to 427-3772. I should point out, though, that if you call at 6:30 or at 7, I'm going to cut you short because I want to leave the lines open for the incoming callers who are going to be doing long-distance calls in, hopefully. Although, again, it's often problematic. These folks are on the road. They're busy. They call me, I don't call them, so sometimes these interviews don't happen, but often they do, and when they do, it can be quite educational, so don't go away. Stay with me, and we'll see what happens there. I got a request from Berkeley. A couple of listeners up there wanted me to report on the East Bay BART shutdown. Actually, it's the San Francisco BART shutdown, I believe, that was being discussed. And that is actually been headline news in the San Francisco Chronicle for the last 3 days, having to do, of course, with the hacking of the BART website, first revealing customers' information, then revealing the names of and the home addresses of BART police officers. And actually, I see more news on in the Chronicle than I do on the East Bay Santa Cruz or East Bay Indy Media website. And boy, is this computer slow! I think we're eventually getting there. So I noticed that the American Civil Liberties Union of BART, I should say, of the Northern California, which is substantially better than the useless American Civil Liberties Union of Santa Cruz, has joined in telling the transit agency no more cell phone censorship. That was the basis of a protest last Monday that was organized around the BART stations because of a previous shutdown of cell phones in the BART stations when there was a protest over the murder of, I guess it's Charles Grant, a homeless man by, I believe it was a BART cop. And again, I'm going to have to go back and double-check that. I haven't been following that story really closely, but let's see if it's on Indy Bay. So I don't have much to tell my Berkeley listeners except, you know, go to the San Francisco Gate website, the Chronicle website, and look at some of the stories there. You know, naturally they're biased about all this cyber thuggery, as the BART officials like to call the attempt to, the successful activity of the activists in drawing attention to BART's abuse by shutting down cell phone use in order to stop or disrupt peaceful, if perhaps civilly disobedient, protest. There is, actually, I'm looking at, there's a lot of photos online here. Anonymous op BART protest shuts down four BART stations, 8:15, 11. And indeed, if you go to Amy Goodman, her entire Tuesday show, or much of it, was devoted to interviews with anonymous op BART activists who were, or supporters, who were communicating why they were doing what they were doing. And I encourage people to listen to those activists and the and Goodman's coverage of them. It did seem a little opaque, going after customers, revealing customer information, but it was a way of making headlines, which, you know, some people say, oh, they're just after publicity, but, you know, publicity around issues like the violation of civil liberties, the murder of homeless people by BART cops, the increased surveillance in society is a good thing. We need to have more publicity around that issue, even if, you know, it seems a little indirect. We do have a caller here. Let's see who's calling and about what. Hey there, you're on Free Radio. Who's calling in?
Oh, I didn't realize I was going to be on the air. Well, where are you? Where's the station now? You're not at 101.1 anymore?
You know, unfortunately, we are without a transmitter, and I'm glad you brought this up, caller. Well, we have a transmitter, but the FCC has cracked down on the landlord. And so we are looking for a new place to locate the transmitter. I mean, usually what happens is the FCC sort of ignores us for a year or two and then writes a nasty letter to the landlord. They don't usually, I mean, there's never been an actual fine or penalty or court case around us. But, you know, that serves to intimidate the landlord. So we are without a transmitter site right now. We need one. And I encourage people to call the voicemail line. And you could do this too, caller, if you have any ideas or you have any friends who have any ideas. A tall tree on your property and access to a power source or on the property of your landlord. 427-4523 is the voicemail for Free Radio.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Bye-bye. And, yeah, that's something that I should have mentioned at the beginning of the show. We are really, there's a reason we're streaming, because we don't have no stinking place to put our transmitter, which means that many of the people who would normally hear us cannot, and that's a serious problem for us. I kind of move on from it because there's nothing I can do in the studio about it, you know, except, you know, babble about it and look to other people in hopes of finding some kind of, you know, encouraging someone to come forward who, or some group of people to come forward who are willing to put up, offer a place for us to put up the transmitter for at least a brief period of time or long enough to transmit and see where we go from there, which we've been doing actually for, what, 16 years now, since 1995. So it's an old tradition here and a good one, and hopefully you'll help us continue, because being on the stream is... It's okay for those who have computers and okay for people who aren't in the area, but obviously it isn't okay for folks who want to hear us in the normal course of events. Anonymous is a group that has also attacked done internet attacks on websites such as the City of Orlando website. Kind of coincidentally, today we're going to be getting hopefully calls, and I'll be giving some updates even if we don't, on the situation with Orlando Food Not Bombs, a group that has been multiply arrested by Orlando authorities for the crime of sharing free food. Food Not Bombs is that group. And I guess Anonymous, the same group, or possibly people from a related group, shut down their website or overtasked it. And similarly, there was a shutdown here in Santa Cruz way back in December of last year, protesting the anti-homeless activities of the District Attorney Bob Lee against Peace Camp 2010 by another group of Anonymous hackers who were hacking the website. And they did that only for an hour because they didn't want to really, you know, create major consternation, but they wanted to send a message that there are public consequences to violating the civil liberties and civil rights of people who may not get a lot of press normally in the day-to-day, but are going to be getting some press, if only because there are others who support them through more militant actions like this. So I think it's worth checking out. Check out Tuesday's Amy Goodman Democracy Now! Show, which has a lot of discussion and some direct interviews with anonymous BART hacksters who shut down the BART website. And there's a protest coming up again on Monday at the BART website, as I understand it. Right, not the BART website, the BART stations in San Francisco. I'm going online here again to see if I can find anything new and seeing if we have anything. Let's see. BART announces they will no longer censor people. This is a story from today at 2:20 a.m. Op BART 2. Protests to continue until BART announces they will no longer censor people during peaceful protests. And there's a protest that's announced Monday, August 22nd at 5 p.m. at the Civic Center in San Francisco, for those of you who would like to go to that. And there is, it says, everyone bring two masks, one for yourself and one to give away. The peaceful protest is surely more chilled out than multiple shootings and censorship, referring to BART's shootings of Oscar Grant and Charles Grant, I believe his name is. No, it was Oscar Grant. Charles, I got to get it. I'll catch his last name, hopefully, before the broadcast ends. People will stand up for what they feel is their right, but if BART chooses to shut down service, at least we warned you ahead of time. Expect us August 22nd, 5 p.m. outside the Civic Center station. Plan accordingly in case police shut down BART. And so I guess they're calling for BART to end the censorship on cell phones, which I was talking with an attorney friend of mine today, and she was astonished to hear that this had happened because she felt it was such a blatant violation of the civil rights of everybody in the BART station in the interest of going after some protesters. And there's a wanted poster on Lyndon Johnson. We want him out. I think he's a BART official. There's a picture of Channel 5 interviewing him. Let's see if I can find some more information here and actually get you the name of the homeless man who was shot dead. I think he was shot dead. Let's see. BART office information was... Here's a story, again, as I mentioned, of BART officer information hacked and released, and I mentioned that. Let's see if... Kenneth Harding was another person. 19-year-old Kenneth Harding was approached by San Francisco police officers during fare inspections on the Muni platform. This was in BART at 3rd and Palou on Saturday, July 16th. Within half a block of running from police through a plaza, he was shot down on Oakdale Street and left to bleed to death as police offered no medical assistance and crowd control. Police arrived to hold back a growing mass of angry residents well before any emergency paramedics reached the area. Charles Hill is, I believe, his name. Justice for Charles Hill, BART action shuts three stations in Santa Cruz. This is another person who was killed. On the evening of July 3rd at the Civic Center BART station, where this protest on Monday is going to happen in San Francisco, two as of yet unidentified BART police officers shot and killed Charles Hill with three rounds to his chest. BART's police chief, Kenton Rainey, declared that he is comfortable with the shooting. On July 11th, at least 150 demonstrators converged the very same station to protest the killing to demand the officers be held accountable, that the BART Police Department be shut down. Protesters had promised to disrupt the Bay Area rapid transit business as usual, and BART PR spokesman Lyndon Johnson was forced to concede they succeeded. And apparently that was when the cell phone usage was cut off on that date, and protests have multiplied and expanded since then against their attempt to shut down protests by opting for censorship of cell phone usage against protests. So, something I also want to mention in Santa Cruz, and it came up on Amy Goodman today, and good for her, is the Verizon strike. I'm going now to the democracynow.org website, and I'm finding that my computer is extremely slow. There's a story by Juan Gonzalez on Verizon workers' strike, most important labor battle going on today, he states. And since, again, since Democracy Now! Covers that, plus interesting stories on the Insecure Communities program, which is, you know, the immigrant snitch deport without trial plan that has been, apparently, is being backed in Santa Cruz as well, although at least it's not being opted out of by the Santa Cruz City. Coonerty's majority on the city council, Mayor Coonerty's majority, has refused to do that, or at least urge the state to, legislators to allow for that option. These are important issues, too, that Democracy Now! Is covering that have a lot of immediate local implications. But the Verizon workers' strike, which I don't know a lot about, but I read a bit about, I'm going to that website now, the democracynow.org website, which you can also find not only audio, which is, you know, interesting and, of course, radio-worthy for sure, but which I'm not going to play because you can hear it by downloading it or by listening to Democracy Now!, not only on this channel but on other radio stations. I'm just kind of scanning there's a rush transcript often of the longer segments of the show, which is useful to people who don't have time to or the patience to really listen to a long Democracy Now! Show or a segment. You can actually read through it more quickly. Juan Gonzalez, who's one of Amy Goodman's partners, states that 45,000 workers up and down the East Coast of the United States, from Virginia all the way to Massachusetts, is striking against one of the biggest corporations or companies in America, Verizon. It's not a General Motors that's in financial trouble, but it's, according to Gonzalez, literally swimming in cash. In the first quarter of this year, it tripled its profits compared to the previous quarter, and it's been consistently outperforming the stock market now for the past several years. What the workers are calling for is what the management is demanding is the freezing of the pensions of the existing workers and eliminating pensions for new workers, talking about payments, sharply increased payments into the health insurance premiums of the workers, which is standard fare in corporate America. But they're insisting also, according to Gonzalez, on eliminating all job security and having the right to contract out work, such as in call centers, outlets in India and the Philippines, which will take over the work done by American workers now, asking workers to give up a bunch of paid holidays, Martin Luther King Day, Veterans Day, a hodgepodge of all these demands. So the workers have gone out and they're vowing. That's the Communications Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, to keep this up as long as possible, their strike, because a company that is so profitable, writes Gonzalez, should not be insisting that its workers give up even more of their hard-fought gains they've had over the years. And the question of whether what they're going to do about their strike fund and what they're going to do when their pensions get cut next month, at the beginning of next month, they start getting fired. I guess my question to the Santa Cruz community is, who wants to start petitioning in front of Verizon Santa Cruz, when there's a Verizon, of course, on Pacific Avenue, that encourage people just to boycott the store, to boycott the business? I think I'm often around homeless issues, and, you know, Communications Workers of America, people probably earn a lot more even than your average minimum wage workers in Santa Cruz. But my belief is when you start cutting the wages of people in unions, this kind of attack follows in other areas of employment as well. And I think we need some kind of solidarity here. So if anybody's interested in this, and I actually brought it up at our last Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, I encourage you to either give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or if you start some kind of a protest, post it on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, and let the community know about it. I think people in Santa Cruz, many of us, would be sympathetic to boycotting this business, at least for the duration of the strike or until they restore the cuts. I mean, to me, it's not just a matter of restoring the cuts, and it's a matter, actually, of sharing these huge profits that apparently they're making, if Gonzalez's account is accurate. Now, I don't have a Verizon spokesperson in here, so that's... you got to make up your own mind how accurate this is. But that's my position at the moment, uneducated and one-sided as it may be. I'm going to take a brief musical break. I think we're going to be soon hearing from an attorney in Orlando who may give us some more insight into the strategies that are going to be followed in the trials that are to come with Food Not Bombs, or if not, if he can't reveal all his cards, maybe he can give us some idea what's going on down there. We've actually spoken to Cheyenne before, but we hopefully will be speaking with him again if he's able to call in. Stay tuned, and we'll hear more. If you want to call in yourself, try calling in at 469-3119. We'll see if we can actually get you in there, and maybe even ask a question or two, make a comment, and or possibly if you have a location for the transmitter, which we need. We're talking the west side, the east side, or possibly one of the hills around Santa Cruz. Downtown in the valley of the downtown isn't really any good for us, but other locations where you have a tree or a rooftop could be really helpful, and you'll be part of the, essentially part of the resistance here in putting out news that no one else puts out here in Santa Cruz. Sarah Marlowe, Peace is What We Need Now, A World of Solidarity, from her album A World to Win, Songs from the Struggle for Global Justice. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. We're not at 101 at the moment, but we hope to be again soon with your help. Call in if you have a transmitter location or a possible location, 427-4523, 427-4523. Or get in touch with a Free Radio person if you feel uncomfortable calling on the phone, or get to us online at www.freakradio.org. Freak, F-R-E-A-K-R-A-D-I-O, one word, small letters, .org. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of an update, because I'm assuming that hopefully soon I'll be hearing from Cheyenne, the attorney in Orlando, who I've been in touch with, and he's got some good news, which he's very excited about. I was perhaps a little less excited, but still pleased to hear about it. I'm going to kind of let him break the news when he calls in, and I'm going to be giving a little background on what is cooking. And I'm also, of course, if you really like to follow these issues, you should get on the Huff email list. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And you can get on the email list by emailing me at rnorse, that's me, Robert Norris, R-N-O-R-S-E, 3, number 3, at hotmail.com, rnorse3 at hotmail.com. We'll put you on the Huff email list, or you can give me a call at 423-4833, 423-H-U-F-F, and I'll do the same. That also goes if you, for any kind of volunteer effort you want to be involved in. If you like any of the stuff you hear on this show and you want to do more about it in an active way, and I'm talking about peacefully and civilly non-violent and possibly disobedient, but, you know, certainly we're looking for people who want to do all kinds of things to essentially stop the, well, I regard it as a war against the poor and, of course, the war against the entire country in the sense that we are fighting wars abroad that are stripping us of all our resources, not to mention our humanity. And it's going to require all of us to help stop this, or at least as many of us as we can get together to do, to fight this. So, looking for the latest updates here from Orlando. And what have I got for you? Well, I talked to Ben Markson, who is one of the first activists arrested in Orlando, and he noted that, and you're going to hear this from Keith at 7, perhaps. Maybe we'll be repeating ourselves a bit, but Keith was arrested twice, once for serving free food and the other time for setting foot in the park after he'd been told he would be given a trespass order. And these are orders used by the police sort of arbitrarily to go after individuals who are they don't want in the park for one reason or another. Now, it's not clear if you actually have to have committed a crime to do this or whether the police can do this, on their own initiative because they don't like the cut of your pants or whatever. I would have to, and I would hope that there would be some probable cause at least. You would have to think before people can be restricted in this way, there's some kind of court order, but I don't think that's the case in Orlando, Florida. But anyway, Keith was trespassed, as they say, trespass ordered away from the park. He helped set up something in the park, forgetting about this, brought some literature in, and he was immediately held, seized, taken to jail, held there for, I think it was something like 17 days. And he recently went back to Florida for his trial. He pled no contest. He got time served, a fine and court costs, didn't get probation, which he was happy about. And he did this so he could remain at liberty and engage in speaking engagements around the country. Trials are going to begin for other Orlando Food Not Bombs members on August 22nd and another on August 25th. A number of them have taken pretrial diversion for various reasons. Ben, for example, took pretrial diversion. He's a spokesperson for Food Not Bombs. He was actually arrested, even though he didn't serve any food, the day that they went in the park. I'm not quite sure what they're going to be able to do with that. He's charged with, quote, prohibited activity in a city park, though not specifically food sharing. This is Ben Markison. They're still serving food no longer at Lake Eola Park, but they're serving at City Hall on Mondays and Wednesdays. They were serving Monday mornings and Wednesday evenings at this Lake Eola Park, which is, I guess, right near Disney World and sort of a huge show park, which embarrassed Mayor Buddy Dyer, as the mayor is called. The mayor tried to essentially lured and kind of terrorized them out of Lake Eola Park by threatening them with a more serious crime of trespass in the park because they were having fed people in the park illegally. They were told they were trespassing, and therefore, if they went in there again, they'd be arrested not just for serving free food, but as Keith McHenry was, for trespassing. They're still working on trying to figure out a referendum campaign. There apparently is no recall provision in Florida. They have, and I guess the attorney is going to talk about this more if and when he calls in, and I'll be reading a story about it if he doesn't. The Democratic Party has officially come out and denounced its Democratic mayor for his anti-food server activities, which is kind of hard to believe. I mean, in San Francisco, actually, the Board of Supervisors did come out against Mayor Frank Jordan when he was heavy into arresting Food Not Bombs in the early 90s. However, I guess the Board of Supervisors is sort of nonpartisan. The Democratic Party machine never came out and denounced either Mayor Jordan or Mayor Agnos or Mayor Brown. or Mayor Newsom or the current Mayor Lee for any of his anti-homeless activities up there. So it's kind of a feather in the cap of the activists that they were able to generate the kind of publicity and broad support and outrage that resulted in even the great and powerful Democratic Party hacks to come down against, you know, this Mayor Buddy Dyer for being less of a buddy and more dire than he should be. Also, I think there's a homeless candidate running in Orlando. A guy named Bruce Shawn is running against the woman who proposed the food ban, Patty Sheehan. No relation to Cindy Sheehan, I would hope, the anti-war activist. Unfortunately, Bruce Shawn only has $550 in his campaign treasury, whereas Patty probably has five figures, according to Ben Markison. You can check for him. You can look for Bruce Shawn, S-H-A-W-E-N, on Facebook. You want to follow the Orlando campaign, and you can check that out. So it looks like we may not be getting a call from Shannon, or he may call in late. We do have, I think, phones are operational because we've gotten one call already. Again, and we are hoping to hear from Keith in about 25 minutes too, Keith McHenry. But what he told us about, what he told me about Orlando when I spoke to him by phone earlier, a couple weeks ago or about a week ago now, was that there was a great kind of state meeting in Florida of all the Food Not Bombs, but Orlando for some reason did not show up. And they're trying to work out a statewide strategy. It could be that they're preoccupied with all the legal problems they're having in Orlando. But the attorney that Cheyenne is that attorney. He is also apparently engaged in a federal and state action against the anti-feeding law, even though the anti-feeding law has been upheld by the an en banc panel of the Federal Court of Appeals there, which is pretty serious stuff and pretty unfortunate. Keith mentioned that he'd gotten a bunch of calls, one from a homeless man flipping out because he got threatened with trespassing for sitting on a bench. Of course, in Santa Cruz, you can sit on a bench, but if you sit there for more than an hour, that's criminal behavior. Thank you very much. So I guess what I'm going to do is read some of the stories that I sent out on the Huff email list and that I was referred to by Cheyenne. As essentially part of the victory that they were able to accomplish there in Orlando, Florida. And let's take a look here. Yeah, the main story is this: Democrats shame Orlando mayor over charity arrest. And this is, let's see if I can get to this, is from the Orlando Sentinel. I'll read the story. A part of it is a commentary. Doing the work of the Good Samaritan, regular citizens next door to Disney World in Orlando, Florida, were sharing their wealth with the hungry and homeless directly by preparing food and serving it. The Orlando locals who made up their Food Not Bombs chapter thought they were doing a selfless act. Unfortunately, this made them criminals breaking a law. In response, leaders are now stepping up to Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer and telling him he is acting inappropriately and that the laws of this nature are senseless. In past write-ups and news commentary on the issue, we are reminded that our current economy has failed many good citizens. For this reason, it is understandable that public spaces are used to help those who have fallen on hard financial times. Tent cities in the park or people living in their cars are not unreasonable in a modern American context, but of course illegal in Santa Cruz. In a general sense, as Americans, we know that when you want to eat something in public, you stop in at a park and eat without harassment. In most cities, you can have a potluck, picnic, or other kind of food-sharing activity without asking anyone for permission. Logically, the idea that Food Not Bombs was committing a crime by helping people was outrageous. However, since early this summer, this group of generous food givers was arrested daily. Each time, they were forced to pay $100 in fines. Actually, they were forced to pay $100 in bail so as to avoid jail, and now they're going to be forced to spend lots of time going to trial and facing 3 months in jail per charge. So there's a mistake with the story. Steering the ship of discrimination against homeless food sharing for months, Mayor Dyer was publicly relentless that the activities of Food Not Bombs needed to end. However, by staying active in the media and continuing its life-giving services, Food Not Bombs Orlando was finally able to appeal to an authority higher than Dyer. Through a written resolution, the mayor was made aware that he does not contain the last word on this issue. Rising to the defense of those who want to help others, the Democratic leaders of Orlando, Democratic Party leaders, which is what they mean here, came forward and asked Dyer to cease and desist. According to a privately distributed press release, Orlando Food Not Bombs wrote, quote, "The Orange County Democratic Executive Committee passed a resolution at their regular August 15th meeting requesting that Mayor Dyer and the Orlando City Council decriminalize food serving in the city parks and refrain from arresting people for food sharing under City Codes 18A091 and 18A092. Currently, Orlando Food Not Bombs still has no direct apology from Mayor Dyer. In order to address this ongoing unresolved situation, chapters around the country are joining Orlando in a day of protest September 16th, 2011. For more information, check the foodnotbombs.net. website. The resolution of the County Commission of Orange County Democrats asking Dyer to stop arresting members of Food Not Bombs concluded with the following written quotes. Quote, "Sharing food with the homeless and hungry is a charitable act that should be commended and supported when done by any individual organization or agency. Such acts of compassion and selflessness must never be criminalized or penalized." And here's a comment from, I should say, an editorial reply from Ben Markison, the individual I talked about before, the leader who was one of the first arrested in the Orlando Food Not Bombs crackdown by Mayor Dyer. He wrote this on August 6th. "Orlando Food Not Bombs has not negotiated or agreed to anything that could be considered a truce or a compromise with Mayor Buddy Dyer or City Commissioner Patty Sheehan, who wrote, apparently, the Orlando Sentinel wrote, thanks to truce, homeless go to City Hall, not park for food. They have refused," Ben Markison continues to write, "to talk to the group and have continued to target and prosecute Orlando Food Not Bombs members. The move to temporarily share food at Orlando City Hall was made under duress. The city has been using a new tactic." I talked about this before, arresting people for trespassing when they carry food into the park, even though that in itself is not a violation of the ordinance. There is no evidence that those individuals were violating the large group feedings ordinance, which I think says you can't feed more than 26 people twice in 1 year in any particular park. There is no evidence that those individuals were violating the large groups feeding ordinance, which requires as a trigger that a certain number of people get food. This unconstitutional behavior on the part of the city was championed by city attorney and former Florida Bar president Mayan Downs. This trespass charge could result in a year in county jail instead of the 60 days, I'm so 60 and not 90 days as I thought, under the food sharing, no food sharing ordinance. Orlando Food Not Bombs does not consider the City Hall Commons Plaza to be an acceptable substitute for Lake Eola Park. The individual is an Orlando Food Not Bombs and those with whom we share are all members of the public and as such should have the right to use any public park, including Lake Eola. Sheehan has implied that the homeless, she's the council member who set up this law, who attend the food sharings commit crimes, and the mayor has called those sharing food with them food terrorists. Dyer is a career politician who knows how to use the press. In the Orlando Sentinel, Dyer tried to spin our being at City Hall as a compromise, but the truth is that the arrests and trespass of 26 individuals for sharing food with poor and hungry people in a public park has proved to be an embarrassment and a political problem for Dyer and Sheehan. In desperation, the mayor has latched onto what he mistakenly believes is a solution, quote, allowing Food Not Bombs to share at City Hall. However, we should not need his invitation or permission to share food at City Hall Commons Plaza, considered a city park under this ordinance, in order to exercise our constitutional rights of free speech, public assembly, and free association. It also proves that Dyer is willing to ignore the ordinance when he chooses to do so, as long as it gets to decide where one breaks his law. Orlando Food Not Bombs' message remains the same. With this ordinance, the city has created a system of economic apartheid, or second-class citizenship, in which access to public facilities is determined by socioeconomic status. In the name of everything decent, the ordinance cannot stand. And that's by Ben Markison. So, that seems to be what's happening in Orlando. We may hear more about this from Keith McHenry. But until that point, I'm going to play some street interviews. And I think this first interview I've got is actually not so much a street interview, but concerns the case of the Sinister Sidewalk Sing-Song Citation crew, of whom I was one, who were simply doing a homeless protest in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, Ryan Coonerty, Supervisor Neil Coonerty's place of business, when we were cited and then tried and finally convicted for so-called unreasonably disturbing noise. Were we screaming at the top of our lungs? You know, were we beating drums loudly in the middle of the night? No, we were singing the song Downtown with homeless lyrics in the middle of the day on a Wednesday, which disturbed a day sleeper, Sean Riley, a perennial crank who has complained repeatedly about different musicians outside his window. And you might say, well, that's not, you know, private citizen may complain. That's his right. Certainly it is. But what happened then was the city attorney jumped on this bandwagon and prosecuted us in a 14-day trial where we were found guilty and we appealed it. And what I'm going to play for you now is a discussion in the hallway outside that appeal hearing. Now, this is an appeal hearing that happened some months ago in the corridors of the courtroom. You're going to hear some discussion. And I have to be, well, I sadly have to tell you that the attempt to appeal it further has been denied by the courts. So we are guilty, guilty, guilty of, according to Commissioner Kim Baskett, unreasonably disturbing noise through singing Downtown, Downtown, during between the hours of 2 and 3 in the afternoon on a Wednesday, which, of course, is preposterous and highly political. And we, I'm sure, are going to be challenging this at some point, but it has exercised a repressive influence on us for the last year and a half. We came back once or twice, but it certainly shut down a lot or discouraged us from these kinds of protests, and we'll have to see where this goes. I think it's just a matter of more carefully monitoring this. If we had merchants who would clearly testify that they did not find our music unreasonably disturbing, I think it would tend to soothe the savage breast of Commissioner Baskett, but who knows. Anyway, let's hear some of the interviews right after the earlier appeal before three judges, which was turned down before our last appeal over in San Jose was turned down.
Departments. Well, outside Department 3, the number of people who showed up looks like about 10 people were in the audience. Here's a couple that showed up. What are your names?
Kent.
Leslie.
Now, you came from far away for this trial?
Very far away.
Indeed. What, India?
No, a galaxy far, far away. A long time ago.
Berkeley, actually.
Yes, yes.
And what was your impression of the trial?
Spacey.
Meaning?
Meaning it just was vague. It was not coming to a conclusion, but at least I found satisfying.
Leslie, you are a legal expert on these issues.
It sounds like they made up their minds before hearing a verbal argument this afternoon, that they made their decision based on your briefs that you filed.
I think that's true.
And they're referring, of course, to two judges who decided that we were properly declared guilty of unreasonably disturbing noise. We do have a noise in the studio, which is the ringing of a phone. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Did you know that the Santa Cruz Police Department made ABC national news?
Well, I hesitate to ask for what purpose or what reason.
For predictive policing, a major PR coup for the SCPD.
Charming.
They were on ABC Nightly News. Zach Friend.
Well, gag me while I hold on to my lunch.
Well, there you go. I wanted to give you that report.
A breaking report, yes. I believe it. I mean, you know, the police department has a lot of money to spend on PR campaigns, and they get all kinds of drug war money and other kinds of secure communities money. So I'm not surprised that they can, you know, get involved with national news. Now, maybe, actually, I don't want to, you know,
sell Zach Friend short, maybe had something to do with restoring civil liberties in Santa Cruz. I mean, Zach has taken a turn for the better. What do you think there, Bob?
I just happened to be flipping the news channels.
Well, you know, Bob,
and caught it. Yeah.
Well, I have you on the line. I understand that the local ACLU, due to your efforts, now you graciously sent me an email about this, has agreed to hear at least, I guess, well, they're going to hear three issues, one of which you disagree on, smart meters, the civil liberties question there. The second, the downtown ordinances that you're not particularly concerned with, as far as I know. Maybe you are. I'm not sure about that. And then the third issue, what was the third issue? The local ACLU has agreed to hear stuff on?
Well, it's your famous case, Robert.
Oh, yes, the one about, you know, can we make a silent, don't act like a bunch of Nazis, two-second salute without being, forced out of the room by the city council? Right.
There's steps. It's steps. And my position on the smart meter thing, in fact, I put a little post on Indy Media attached to Joshua Hart's bogus rant. There's a little post about people that claim electromagnetic force sensitivity. There is zero from the World Health Organization, zero causal relationship that can be attached to radio waves in that regard.
Well,
that includes smart meters. And my thing about smart meters, as I told Steve Plates, if you're going to go after that kind of stuff, privacy issues, go after behavioral advertising.
I know. I am trying to cut you off on the smart meters thing, because I think the issue is, remember, for them, for the ACLU, the issue is the civil liberties question as to whether, I guess it could be, should you be forced to take a smart meter from the, PG&E if you don't want to? And secondly, does the information conveyed by a smart meter violate civil liberties? But that really wasn't the issue you brought to the ACLU. You brought a number of other issues, such as, Wes Modes, the harassment of him for walking in a parade.
And you.
And so forth.
And Steve Argue.
Sure.
And Becky Johnson. So, yes, to a very large degree, the so-called downtown ordinances. Steve Argue was arrested and spent time in jail for being in one spot more than an hour.
Right, the famous move-along law, yeah.
Right, and it was thrown out by a very righteous judge that said, you can't do this. This is unconstitutional. You allow commercial interests to be out there. In fact, on Pacific Avenue now, there's a dancing cupcake.
But, of course, remember that was quickly changed in terms of the law was slightly modified so that police go along and then move everybody along every hour now quite regularly without ignoring that decision.
Well, the dancing cupcake has been there for quite a while, maybe a couple of weeks.
Well, dancing cupcakes are much more attractive than me and Steve argue. Yeah. You know that.
There are clear cases where the ACLU has consciously chose by its omission, support abuse of power in Santa Cruz.
Indeed, the ACLU was not involved in that case. And I guess the last time it was involved was making a brief statement that they opposed part of the parking lot trespass law, which says that you can't sit in your car and read a book in a parking lot, period, actually. You have to be either parking or retrieving a vehicle or walking through. That's
the point that I would raise, Robert, would be abuse of power on a local basis is off the table for the ACLU local chapter. In fact, what they do where they are complicit is by looking the other way, by keeping the title, by keeping the positions, by maintaining a chapter that says on their website that they defend the Bill of Rights in Santa Cruz County, by having that front and not acting when called upon.
Well, they are having a meeting next month, according to Steve Plation. I'm going to give him a call shortly to get his position, since neither you or I were invited to this meeting or even knew it was happening, right?
Oh, no, not at all. As I said to you, the only meeting that I'm aware of, they don't post this stuff on their website, was by extreme pressure. We found out about a meeting in February. Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, no, this is not what ought to be. If this is a public service organization, well, then they have public meetings, or at least part of their meetings are open to the public. I could go on and on. I mean, the Ryan Coonerty, whatever one thinks of Mr. Coonerty, Mr. Ryan Coonerty, being given a Hammer Justice Award is the height of
bad judgment by the ACLU.
Propriety. I mean, it was to
I'll go so far as to say that it was a cover-up of cowardice. You want to cover stuff up, you give somebody an award.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that, Bob, because I know...
This is the same year that the West Mose affair happened, Robert, last year.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I don't think it gets much more clear than that. One guy is cited and convicted for participating in a parade without a permit.
Right, which everybody participated in. It's ridiculous.
Right.
Are you going to be
going
to this ACLU meeting in next month, or are you going to be trying to go to it?
I might. If others will be there, if you'll be there, yes. I'll try to make it. If it's in the evening, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know.
September?
I was just reading the email from Steve Plates that you were good enough to forward me. He didn't send it to me directly. So I don't know. I'm actually going to call him up now. Maybe we can learn some more.
Cool enough. Robert, take care.
Thank you, Bob.
You bet.
Bye-bye. So actually, that's what I'm going to do right now at the risk of hopefully of not cutting off any other callers who are calling in. Let's see if we can get a hold of... Sterling Steve Plaich. Steve is quite accessible every Monday as a homeless legal assistance project at Calvary Episcopal Church. Hey, Steve, it's your favorite over at Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, all of my good friends at Free Radio Santa Cruz.
And hello to you, Steve Plaich. We just spoke with your old buddy Bob LaMonica.
Hey!
And he's actually listening even as we speak. He wonders if you can give us some more details about this ACLU meeting. I do, too. I'm wondering how many folks were at the last ACLU meeting?
This one we had seven members, and we also voted in a new member, Alan Hicks, who's a local organizer of some note, works for the Brown Berets and that kind of thing.
Was this an open meeting or was it a closed meeting?
As far as I know, it's just a closed meeting because it was a board of directors meeting.
So are all the board of directors meetings closed and only occasionally they open up to the public? Because I know that when you and I first came to a meeting, it was a board of directors meeting, but we came anyway, remember, in February.
Yeah. I suspect that if you look at the procedures, there's probably some kind of an oral communications period or something. Not unlike what we have at our city council, where you're able to blather on and on for as well. Oh, no, wait a minute. That's not the Santa Cruz City Council.
Two minutes only,
yeah.
Steve.
But, no, I think, and it just hasn't come up because nobody's wanted to come and address this since Bob was there last. Has any, made any direct request to come and address it at length. I know Bob had sent an email to the board that I saw, and there was no action taken on that request at this meeting.
I think Bob wanted to make a 30 to 40 minute presentation to the board, as I remember from his email, but it seems peculiar that you're not mentioning, or the ACLU, I don't want to say you, because I don't think you're, they're responsible for what the rest of these people have done. Hopefully not, anyway. I'm sure you're not. It should be on the website that there are these meetings, that there is an open interval, if there is an open interval, that there isn't an open interval, if there isn't, that there is a process. And, of course, none of that is there, but I think there's a reason that it's not there. We've had the impression that this is a closed club. Now, you've been able, apparently, although you didn't do me the courtesy of emailing me, which I found interesting, Steve Plaich, you did email Bob LaMonica about this issue, and he was nice enough to forward it to me, in which you mentioned that you're going to be covering at the next ACLU meeting because of your initiative, and I commend you for this, Steve, smart meters, downtown ordinances, and the question of, censorship at city council and this extended lawsuit that the city has taken to the Supreme Court to justify its right to call a silent negative gesture of toward city council and exclude someone, the disruption, which, of course, is ridiculous.
And those items were placed on the agenda at my request, and I was asked to give kind of a brief overview of all of those issues and how they impacted local values and what civil liberties issues arose in the context of each one of those. And I did that briefly, and full board agreed to each individually look at those issues particularly. And the next meeting will be coming back and hopefully reaching some kind of consensus in terms of support for the civil liberties aspects of smart meters, maybe some kind of a condemnation of the downtown ordinance that restricts panhandling with folks unfortunate enough to have dogs along with them, as you know. And then perhaps some kind of support for a settlement in Norse versus the city of Santa Cruz. Interestingly enough, when I brought up Norse versus the city of Santa Cruz and attempted to kind of give a brief overview, it was requested by Peter Gelbaum, who, as you know, is the president of our board. Mike Cazzolo, he typed up who's sitting next to me, says, "Oh, Robert wants a complete repeal of the camping ban. He won't settle for anything less. Says we'll never get anything out of that." And I said, "No, I'm afraid that you're wrong. I think that I know Robert's mind on this matter better than anybody in this room, and I can tell you that it is possible, at least, that he would settle for something less than a full repeal of the camping ban." And
particularly
in terms of the decorum and protocol and our communications restrictions at city council, which Peter Gelbaum thought was very thoughtful and agreed that that was a civil liberties issue that we should take up. So without putting you in a corner in terms of what you would or would not settle for in terms of dismissing this case if it were coming to some kind of a settlement, we are each going to look at it individually, and next week or next month we'll take it up and try to reach some kind of consensus on those and other issues. So, yeah, those are the things that I wanted to communicate to Bob, because Bob had communicated to me his disappointment with past performances of the board. And one of the things I think that the website doesn't contain any information about any public hearing is that it's so poorly maintained that I don't think anybody's even looked at it for as long as we can remember. Maybe that's one of the other things that we have to kind of look forward to in the future, is actually getting somebody in there, a webmaster of some kind, who will be able to update it and actually provide some useful information. My suspicion is, and I've only looked at it once or twice myself, is that nobody maintains it. It's just there.
Well, I'm assuming that the next meeting you will give the public, you individually, Steve Plaich, the civil liberties champion, will give people ample notice, if they want to bother to come to these ACLU meetings, that it's happening, and that, you know, if the ACLU board wants to start excluding the public and not providing oral communications, they can certainly do that, but that at least the public has a chance to present themselves, right?
Sure. Yeah, I don't think there's any reason
why. Well, I know you didn't
do
that at the last meeting. You didn't let me know or anybody else know about it. So if you did it at the next meeting, it would be quite helpful, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm certain we can do that. My suspicion is that there is some kind of oral communication permitted. Certainly not most boards of directors that I've served on or have been vetted for. You can actually attend some of them. And really, if you're a nominee or being considered for the board, you have to attend a certain number of board meetings in order to be considered. They didn't require that of me, of course. But nevertheless, you can't really be in the room when they're talking about, say, financials or some kind of other...
right, but nobody was informed there even was a meeting, or that you had the... I knew sort of anecdotally that you had some issues you would be bringing up at an ACLU meeting at an uncertain time, but you never informed any of us there was such a meeting, nor did you advise anybody but Bob that it happened. So I'm glad that...
Really get any interest from anyone that they had any intention of even coming or attending. You know, usually all I get is what the ACLU doesn't do, and I really don't get any constructive suggestions of what they could do, and maybe say, "Hey, the next award meeting, why don't you invite us so I can say something about it?" Now that you have indicated that you'd like to come and say something about it, I'll make sure you can.
Well, I'm just thinking that, you know, I think all of us are concerned about the civil liberties of people under the downtown ordinances. I think all of us are equally well aware of the failures of the ACLU in the past on this issue. And so I'm not trying to suggest that it's worth a lot of people's energy to go to these meetings, nor am I suggesting that I'm going to, you know, fluff the ACLU and tell them what a wonderful group they are and what they can do. But there are some of us, as you know, Steve, who have been studying the downtown ordinances for years and being arrested under them, who probably can give the ACLU, if anybody's interested, probably the best thing to do is to contact you and other people who are raising this issue can provide information that you can give, since, you know, you think it's worth your time and energy.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, having myself spoken at both readings of the downtown ordinances that we're talking about, particularly with the suspension of the downtown dog ordinance, and having been, you know, in a position to know exactly what's going on because I am present and vocal and concerned, you know, then that's something that I can speak about. You know, anybody who wants to get involved, they just have to indicate that they want to get involved. And
they have to know that there is a meeting and where it is.
Never been a problem for me. It's never been a problem for me.
Yeah, right. But you know where it is. You know what's going on. And we didn't. But, and, you know, not that I'm that terrible. I mean, I don't. I'm impressed with those who are interested in civil liberties who are stepping forward. And let me ask you, because you are working as a homeless legal assistance project, a volunteer, not to mention the lone peace activist on Saturday. Are you still doing
this? That's right. Yeah, that, in fact, this Saturday is my birthday, and I'll be making a special appearance out there.
Oh, boy. Is your mom going to appear as well? After all, she's to be blamed for your birth.
No.
So that's going to happen. You're going to be. Now, when is this protest going to happen?
I'll probably be there from about 12:45 until 1:45 because I actually have to meet somebody on a legal matter downtown right at 2 o'clock.
That's on Saturday.
Saturday, August 20th.
Saturday, August 20th, okay.
Which is, yes, 2 days from now.
Not too late.
Should shop for something useful.
Well, yeah, maybe a constitution to bring with you to the ACLU meeting and remind them of their responsibilities.
I can borrow one from one of our Tea Party fellows.
Or maybe a set of the downtown ordinances, because the dog law around panhandling is one of the most minor of all the laws criminalizing the homeless in Santa Cruz. Not that you shouldn't bring it up, but if you want to look at the panhandling ordinance, you need to look at it more broadly, I would think. And we can talk about this in greater length when you have the time, if you're interested. And obviously, you and I, we haven't really discussed the panhandling law at any great length. But,
well, that's one of the things that I suggest, that we take a broader look at all of the downtown ordinances, and I think that's something that we're going to consider doing.
So, you know, one of the things that you have been most outspoken about and have taken a lot of flack for, I would imagine, though you seem to weather it pretty well, is your outspoken opposition to the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance and the entire camping ordinance, in fact, in the Santa Cruz City Code.
Yeah, well, I campaigned advocating for complete repeal of the camping ban. I have never backed away from that. As a matter of fact, as you know, from the voices from the village, I reiterated my position that the camping ban is a failed policy and it must be repealed.
Let's talk about that Voices from the Village show. I found it very interesting because this is originally a show about the census and the homeless problem based upon the new numbers, the rising numbers of youth and vehicular homeless. You were there. Peter Cooper, the census guy, was there.
Peter Connery.
Thank you very much. Peter Connery. Sorry about that. I've been... some other Cooper guy, but
Father Joel Miller and Monica Martinez.
Right. Now, of course, there was nobody in the audience but me and Charlie Phillips, who's the producer of the show. Mm-hmm. But I stepped up to the mic at one point and raised an issue which you and I, in different ways, have been raising with Monica Martinez and her homeless service center for some time. And that was the issue of, you know, the sleeping ban ticket situation. We have an ordinance which says if you get a ticket, it'll be written off if you're on the waiting list. And yet we have there's no way to show a cop evidence that you're on the waiting list, so that they might choose to back off and do something else, or they might have to suffer some embarrassment if they don't back off, because when it's clear you're on a waiting list, it's clear mm-hmm. you're covered by the ordinance. So
that's a suggestion that's been made in the past by Becky Johnson, Ed Fry, Gary Johnson, yourself, me.
Right, and ignored repeatedly by Monica Martinez, but then she made a strange statement. Do you remember that?
I remember that she said that there would be receipts available, and that I think, without paraphrasing her, because I can't tell you exactly what she said, that they should be willing to issue some kind of a letter saying that somebody's on the waiting list and or that the shelters were full. I'm not really sure. I think you kind of have to archive that Voice from the Village and maybe get a full recording of that.
Right, which I think will be archived online, and I understand Becky Johnson has already done that. I did a rather primitive recording of it. And you know what I did was, and you may have read it, I sent out an email to Monica Martinez afterwards. I thanked her for that. But, I mean, we have to be accurate about the historical record. It's not that you have to remember exactly what she said at that meeting. And you probably do, which is not that would be the case, but that has always been the case, which is, frankly, a false statement. And the reason I say false rather than mistaken is because I was in the room when her subordinates, with her present, made the following statement. One, there would be no letters issued to people coming in with camping tickets seeking to have a statement that the shelter was full. They were not doing that anymore. That was done in June. And then secondly, as you and I well know, Martinez has persistently refused to issue receipts or letters that indicate you're on the waiting list. So her claim that they've always been doing this was simply not true. Would you agree with that?
her claim notwithstanding, if the point is that they are going to issue receipts and they are going to issue some kind of a letter that will be useful to relieve the burden of the camping ban on people, then that's all I need to know.
Yeah, I know. You glide over it. But I think honesty on the part of public officials is an important thing. Much as I like to see us finessing through embarrassment changes in public policy, I'm glad when that happens. But I think we must also draw into consideration whether these public officials are being honest with us generally. She made two dishonest statements. I mean, I'm glad in a way that she's, you know, has to segue into, oh, we've always done that and we'll keep doing it because I'd like to see her do it. But first of all, we have no indication she is going to continue doing it unless you have some new information. Have you gotten any new information from Monica?
I always have new information.
Excellent.
But I'm afraid I just can't share it with you, your audience, right now.
Ah, so it's sort of sub rosa information, eh?
Yeah, you know.
No, I don't either. Well,
the sheer tonnage of what I know that other people don't would stop that downtown trolley in its tracks.
I see. But in other words, but have you heard of her actually issuing a camping ban letter that says our shelter was full? Or have you heard of her issuing a statement that you're on the waiting list after a person has signed up?
No, I haven't heard any of that, but that's something we'll kind of be pursuing in the coming days, so we'll see what comes of it.
Perhaps you'll be able to share that with us and not make it a top-secret matter, eh, Steve?
We'll be able to share that with you as soon as it becomes a matter of public record.
Well, I would think it is a matter of public record now whether someone is on the waiting list.
Policy changes aren't always a matter of public record.
Well, she stated it publicly before a TV audience. What's more public than that?
Well, seems public enough to me, but we will have to see.
But you don't think it's public enough to talk about on the show, is that correct?
I want to know exactly what she said, and I don't recall it word for word.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Steve.
And neither apparently does anybody else.
Steve.
So,
Would you like me to play you her words word for word without making you...
No, actually, I'd rather see it transcribed by Becky, who I have a lot of confidence in.
Okay, well, we'll come back to you, Slippery Steve, because that's probably what I'm going to start calling you. Anything else that, you know, has happened in the last week that we should know about?
I'm doing stuff every day, but, it's just too difficult to recap everything when I don't, you know, if you hear from anybody, you know, for a week or so. So we'll just have to leave it at that.
Actually,
and I'll fill you in the next time.
I've called you several times and you haven't returned my calls, but I do appreciate your coming on the air. Thank you.
Well, I'm always accessible to my good friends at Free Radio. And hello to my good friend Bob Lamont.
Okie doke. Well, I'll get back to you, and maybe we'll see how accessible you are, Steve.
Okay.
Thanks. And, you know, Steve is always a man of very good nature, and I commend him for that. But Steve is also running for Santa Cruz City Council, and that can be a task that may compromise one's objectivity, one's willingness to be candid, one's concerns in terms of not offending certain parties, and that can happen. And, you know, while it's important to recognize one's allies, even if one's allies are not always everything one would hope them to be, I guess I set a pretty high standard about clarifying the extent to which you can trust or be traveling with an ally, and that's going to be an issue for me. And I've been quite candid with Steve about this. I don't think I'm bushwhacking him on it. I really appreciate a lot of what he does, and some of what he does I don't appreciate. And I think it's important to be candid on both issues. But again, I'm not a politician. I'm not a diplomat. And that, you know, certainly has its downside as well. I offend people, and that can happen, you know. And what do you think? Give a call. 469-3119 is the call-in number. 469-3119. Give a call while we... why don't we begin with a little more of this, what I began to play before Bob LaMonica called in, which is some of the discussion in the hallway after the sing-song citation decision, the decision that it's okay for a day sleeper to shut down political singing on Pacific Avenue, and it's a fine use of public money for the city attorney to join in that effort. These are implicit lessons from this particular court decision that the unreasonably disturbing noise law, as applied, was far too vague to really be acceptable in this situation. Although I guess we might have been also attacking it on more general grounds as well. Let's hear some of the discussion in the hallway afterward.
and perhaps on a desire not to overturn a commissioner in good standing.
I see.
Well, I don't know. That would be
your opinion.
It is perhaps my opinion, yes. Linda Lamaster, you were here for some of this appeal hearing. What did you make of it?
Same thing I felt the last time I saw one of these NBank panels, that they'd made up their mind on the reading, and they did some careful listening here, unlike the other one, but it felt like they'd already made up their mind. I enjoyed hearing you read aloud, but then you know I like hearing you read aloud.
What a great reader I am, I have to admit. Here's Becky Johnson, who some months ago actually went through the same process and got the same result. What do you think about all this, Becky?
She got even a shorter shaft.
Shorter shrift, so to speak.
I was a little surprised to hear that they were relying on evidence presented in my case for this case when it was entirely different.
Set of legal arguments. Well, actually, probably similar legal arguments, but a different case. Actually, the trial itself was a different trial, so... And they're supposed to be examining the conduct of the trial.
Although it did have the same sort of thing where, as in my case, the allegation that we sang 3.5 to 4 hours, I lost on my appeal, and Judge Simons said that perhaps if we hadn't sang for 3 hours straight in the same spot, it seems that they need to incorporate basically an untruth into the foundation of why they upheld this conviction, and that is the claim that we had been singing for 4 hours straight, which was clearly not true. And so it's based on basically a perjury on the state, on the part of Sean Riley, the only witness who was against us. And both the Basket and Almquist found that...
The two judges who heard the case.
Exactly. Both judges found that Sean Riley's testimony was compelling and seven witnesses were not.
Sean Riley was the day sleeper who's apparently was unable to get to sleep because we were singing downstairs in the so-called free speech zone next to the Tom Scribner musical saw where groups regularly perform and sing.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I know that your case was not appealed beyond that. It looks like this time they're a little more nervous. They didn't make comments about how, you know, naughty, naughty, naughty for going on for 4 hours. So the four-hour time was mentioned as a basis for their believing that there was sufficiency of the evidence. I think there was that, even though you have to believe at best that Sean Riley was in error. You say perjury, I say at least he was in error. He came, you know, it was his conclusion.
He testified the same people were singing from 11 o'clock on. It's not true, and it must be a lie.
Do you think it's motivated by a determination not to tell the truth but to create a story?
I felt he stuck to it, even when we produced hard evidence that we had put a notice in Indy Bay the day before saying that our event started at 1:30. A fact not disputed by the opposition and yet completely ignored in Basket's decision.
Ironically, Basket used as part of her decision the claim that our previous meeting, which happened during the time when we were supposedly playing and singing, was where we were conspiring to disturb the business at the bookshop Santa Cruz.
And for those who don't know, we have regular meetings at the Sub Rosa Cafe, Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom did. Our regular meeting time, I think at that time, was 10:30 to 12:30. Now it's from 10 to 12 every Wednesday, for those of you who want to jump on board or check it out. And the claim that Riley made was that we were actually not at that meeting, but in front of the bookshop singing away. When in fact, you know, he may have mistaken us for someone else. He may have, he made the claim that and the evidence was supposed evidence was used to convict us that we sang for 4 hours, which of course we sang for a total of about 15 or 20 minutes in different blocks of time between 2 and 3 on that afternoon, and that's what is such a striking injustice about this whole case. And really, this is a case about
the rights of street performers downtown, not to be told by a private person who doesn't like what they're doing that they can't sing downtown or they can't play downtown in the middle of the day. That there's already a move-along law, which I think is unconstitutional, but they don't even want to use the move-along law. They want to tell people to shut up and move along if somebody is offended, which certainly is the antithesis of the reality of the constitutional rights people have on the sidewalk. You have the right to say things that do disturb people, to sing things that disturb people. You know, provided it is not such that it actually disrupts a business or causes physical, it has to be almost in shrieking volume, although there's no volume requirement. And that's one of the things about this strange, unreasonably disturbing noise law that is, frankly, unreasonably disturbing.
Especially telling for Robert Facer, who didn't sing a note and yet was convicted of unreasonably disturbing noise. I also thought it was interesting they said we played a guitar and a drum 4 hours straight. There was a drum, but it was inaudible on any of the audio tapes that we had, and there was no guitar. So,
but he was part of the meeting, and so he made suffer or caused to appear this whole vicious protest, which was designed to disturb the Bookshop Santa Cruz and should have been understood as having that purpose.
I didn't hear Burdick or Maragonda address that issue at all, that we were in a conspiracy to disturb the staff at Bookshop Santa Cruz.
But that was, in fact, the conclusion of Commissioner Kim Baskett, which we had really no clue that she was even considering as a possibility, because that was not our intention. We couldn't have done it even if we'd wanted to. I mean, the Bookshop Santa Cruz is recessed deeply into the building. There's a lot of noise during the day. We would have to be screaming, and that would have been also a violation of a number of other city laws. It's possible that Baskett drew that conclusion because we talked about the possibility at our meeting that the police might move us along under the so-called move-along every hour law. And what we would do if that were happening, we would, you know, there's apparently a way to get around that by having someone else set up a display device and continuing one's activities as a second organization. She apparently either didn't understand that or willfully misconstrued the whole thing in order to find the what seemed to be the prefabricated conclusion that we were guilty, in spite of the fact that the overwhelming majority of testimony was that we were doing what had normally been done in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz at such protests for the last 3 or 4 years, which happened periodically every few months by Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, partially because it's where the mayor hangs out during the day. We wanted to make contact with the mayor. He refuses to return phone calls and do interviews. He is very infrequently returns, well, he's gotten better at returning the occasional email, but he's really inaccessible. And also, the mayor is a political figure who is notorious for his anti-homeless positions. And hence, our concern about homeless civil rights is best placed next to his business. So people who are patronizing his business can be aware of where he stands on these issues, and perhaps he can come out and talk about it and can clarify what his position is. Of course, he's never chosen to do that.
So that was, in fact, the claim of the Commissioner Baskett.
Yeah, Baskett claimed that, but there was no testimony to that, no claim on either side that we planned to disturb the peace of the people inside, more that we wanted to interact with customers coming and going. It's kind of a little frightening in there that they're saying, well, this place here, you know, where people come and go, and place where where people, you know, residents are upstairs, you know, this isn't really a place where you can sing. And I thought that was kind of frightening to hear them rationalizing that kind of a restriction.
I think they're trying to split the baby. They're trying to say, well, maybe it's constitutional problems, but we're not going to second guess our commissioner, but we will certify it to a higher court.
And again, what I'm referring to here was the decision by Judges Burdick and Maragonda that they would not agree that they should overturn the verdict of Commissioner Baskett that we were guilty of unreasonably disturbing noise by causing Sean Riley the inability to go back to sleep during the day, even though he's a night worker and a day sleeper. Rather, this issue was, at this point, was being appealed to a higher court, which, as I said before, I just learned several days ago, has been turned down in spite of a lot of really hard work by activist Steve Plaich. Let me give him a tip of the hat. And Ray Glock-Runike, a legal worker who has for many years been a supporter of homeless civil rights and hopefully will continue to be, although I think he's moving to China. I have to start working on the Chinese homeless over there. Maybe he will. Who knows?
Not surprised that they upheld the conviction because they really seem hell-bent to go down this road no matter how far it goes. So as disappointing as it is, it's not surprising.
We've been talking with
Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking.
That is, in fact, your blogspot, Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com, on which you have some rather extensive articles as well as the complete basket decision. For those who want to hear or read Commissioner Baskett's decision.
Yes, there is a written out version of the audio portion of her decision, and it's there in toto if you want to go read it.
Thank you, Becky. Steve Plaich, you observed the trial. In fact, you helped prepare some of the briefs, which, of course, were significantly altered from their original format in the repetitious, endless discussion of due process. Or
which was noted by the court.
due process is what we got from the court. But what did you make of the whole thing?
Well, I think it was refreshing to hear the court say that both sides briefed the case as well, that there were substantial issues of unsettled law that really merited hearing at the appellate court level, and they were willing, sua sponte or ex proprio motu, on their own motion, to sign the papers that we had prepared to certify the case to Sixth Appellate Court. So I think the outcome was very good in terms of pursuing this at an appellate court level, where I think you get a better hearing on municipal ordinances when they're a little bit more distant from the county in which the ordinances is being enforced.
So you might say not in bed with the city authority?
Well, I wouldn't say that, but what I'm saying is a little distance, particularly when you're examining municipal ordinances generally is a good thing.
Now, let me ask you this. Is there a requirement that the district court hear the appeal, or do we have to pay money to get this appeal? What do you know the status of this, or are you not yet well informed?
I can't imagine that the Sixth Appellate Court, having had the case certified for transfer by this appellate department, would deny a hearing on the matter.
But unfortunately, Steve was wrong, and they did deny it, although we brought them the huge transcript, which was 14 days of testimony in an infraction case, which is almost unprecedented, maybe even unprecedented. It's unprecedented as far as I know in a Santa Cruz infraction courtroom. Infraction is the lowest form of case. It's the most, you know, trivial or minor case, you know, like jaywalking or this is unreasonably disturbing noise. And the court refused to consider it. They refused to transfer, even to consider the transfer. And so I want to thank Steve and Ray, though, for trying to do that.
I imagine that they would do that. Generally speaking, in civil appeals, there would be a price, but this is a penal code violation, so you shouldn't be any cost at all to file the papers. There are certain more strict requirements in terms of filing your brief. It has to be in a certain kind of paper. It has to be a certain number of pages. It has to be bound in a certain way. It has to be a certain the service has to be exactly right. So all those things, the procedural matters have to be observed, but certainly a hearing in the Sixth Appellate District would be something to look forward to.
Now, you heard the judges say that they couldn't re-examine the evidence or the credibility of the main witness, on which the case, Becky Johnson has pointed out, really stands or falls. The four-hour duration, lies, her word, misconstruction might be the most generous way of putting it, or confusion on the part of the main witness. What can the court decide? What kinds of issues can it look into? Can it look into the conduct of the trial? Can it look into the conduct of the appeals court? Can it look into the conduct of your conduct? And what can it look into?
Well, you know, they can look at all matters that impact the operation of law. So if there had been some mistake or error in law, law made by Commissioner Baskett. They could have examined that. They pointed out if they would have found that Sean Riley's testimony was wholly incredible, was wholly unsupportable in the facts, they could have reexamined that fact. But they didn't make that finding. They weren't prepared to make that finding. So any reference by Ed or by yourself, not so much by yourself, but certainly Ed's attempt to have the facts reexamined was just mistaken, and they rightly did not reexamine.
And by Ed, Steve is referring to Ed Fry, attorney for Robert Facer. This is a consideration of the appeal of myself and Robert Facer. Becky Johnson's appeal had already been dismissed.
Facts which they are not entitled to.
But we could argue insufficiency of the evidence if we can show that the facts were completely bogus at the higher court level.
I don't know how you would do that if you could re-examine the facts. There's really no way. There's no metric that you can look at. If you can't re-examine the facts, you can't re-examine the fact that there's insufficient of the evidence to support the decision.
So there's never a case which you can show insufficiency of the evidence?
Sure, there are. But generally speaking, those are cases in which some evidence was found to be inadmissible, and the court in error admitted that evidence, and in the absence of that evidence, there is not sufficient evidence to support the verdict.
We can't claim that any of the evidence was inadmissible because there were no objections properly made at the time?
So that would be one thing.
I would say,
Linda LeMaster speaking.
I would say, because the two judges, and Bob Almquist and, well, she's not a judge, Baskett,
trial court judges,
put their own words in the witness's mouth, or in the complainant's mouth, instead of hearing what he said. They almost studied avoiding what he actually said because they were looking to hear key words, and when they didn't hear him, they said what he wanted him to have, what the judges wanted him to have said. You know, Baskett like that.
Are you have any specific recollection of a particular phrase that you think that occurred with respect to?
No, I don't right now. Just a visceral memory that I can't quite.
And we're continuing this. Kind of look back at the sinister sing-song sidewalk case.
Carl Brune now has some comments. Carl, you're a radio broadcaster.
Hi.
While you're being interviewed,
I could interview you.
Go ahead, interview me.
I thought
why don't you interview us, both of us?
I need two recorders.
Well, you can start with her or me, or you can have us.
No, I need two recorders. By the way, excellent job getting the appeals or whatever they affirmed. Although I must say I was a little worried when you guys started to argue that you might lose the affirmation of the appeal.
I was thinking of, you know, singing downtown in a vociferous voice, but
vociferous is far too vague a legal term.
That's a good point. It would be an illegal kind of singing, as you know, singing being illegal unless it's necessary. So go ahead. You're going to interview us.
I was going to interview you interviewing her while she interviewed you.
I see. All right, well, Coral, I'm not sure who starts. Who starts this interviewing of the interviewing?
I don't mean to interject, but I think the problem would be who ends the interviews.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I'll begin the interview.
Well, that ends well.
So, Carl, you showed up at this hearing, and did you? What did you expect, and what came out of it? Anything that you didn't expect?
I didn't expect there to be two judges or one. I didn't expect that they would, like...
Normally, there's a three-judge panel.
Yes, they were so thankful that we let that slide. I don't know why. They were so...
They don't want to come back and do it again. I thought seriously of actually initially not stipulating the two judges because I wanted to see how they went with this case, thinking as in the original case of Becky Johnson when they tried her, and we then thought if we can, very canny, we'll come back, we'll see what happens there, and we will avoid all the mistakes. Unfortunately, I think this is a pretty hopeless crew that we're dealing with. They are determined to uphold the lower court's judgment, I think, frankly, in the face of the overwhelming evidence. I think that, as Becky has said, many witnesses testifying, it was not unreasonably disturbing compared with one partisan witness who did. It does not seem reasonable or fair to me.
Wait, one witness?
Sean Riley.
Versus how many other witnesses?
Six or seven. I think we had Valerie Promise. We had
Tony Cuspo, we had Coral Brune, we had myself, we had Robert Facer, we had Becky Johnson. I think Free testified. I think Joe Schultz testified, although he didn't hear much of the actual event.
And what did you think of one of the judges hiding behind, oh, well, that requires us to examine the character, veracity, blah, 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 blah.
Well, in terms of any supposedly their job is not to reexamine the evidence. They're supposedly limited in what they can do. That's what Steve Plage, my legal advisor, tells me.
And Carl,
and Free, my occasional legal advisor.
What do you think about Robert's explanation to that sharp legal point?
Of the expose he just read or what he just said?
No, I was asleep during that portion.
You should have filed a complaint and then possibly could have had it also arrested or cited or fined.
No, actually, sleeping is not allowed in court. So.
During the day, sleeping is demanded. In fact, if you aren't allowed to sleep, we get to arrest those who wake you up.
Now that I think about it, I can't recall if I was sleeping during that portion or not.
Recollection is another problem we have, yes.
Yeah, they were able to show that Sean Riley had more credibility than anyone. They were able to show that somehow, but I don't know how they proved it. He did me not recognize my friend Michelle. He said that she was there singing and protesting, and he just like pointed a finger, and the police believed him. So
what Coral is referring to is, for those who have followed this case, as I have, unfortunately, over the last year and a half, there was a resident of the St. George, Michelle, who came down hearing some of the, well, I think she, I'm not sure she heard the hubbub, or she just happened to come out of the St. George, because we were debating this with the officer on the street, as to if you want us to be quiet, let us know how quietly you want us to be, and because that's what Officer Schoenfeld was telling us. She wanted us to either move. First it was move, then it was be quiet, then it was I can't tell you how quiet, and I won't tell you if I find it too loud. We were having that problem as well. But the minute when she came out there, and Officer Schoenfeld advised Sean Riley that he better come down and give us tickets because we weren't leaving and we weren't quieting down, as though it were somehow our responsibility not to have some words with the officer on the sidewalk about the issue when she was threatening essentially to shut down a political protest without giving us any standard to use as to how loud we could be, how soft we needed to be. It was all just going to be essentially move along kind of was sort of the unspoken message. And that, of course, was the reason that this exercise to some extent was happening at all. That is to say, we knew that street performers were being essentially shut down by cops coming up and saying, we have an anonymous informant who thinks you're singing or playing too loud. You either move along or you'll get a ticket. And then the person will say to the cop, well, how loud can I play? I say, well, that's not my problem. I don't know. They just think it's too loud, and we'll give you a ticket on their say-so, even though we may listen to you and think it's just fine. And when we tried to introduce Officer Schoenfeld's testimony at the court as to whether it was unreasonably disturbing, it was ruled irrelevant. That's what was so strange. Even though Officer Schoenfeld was very close to us, she could hear it better than anyone else, and it was just ruled irrelevant. So it was a fixed, rigged game to start with and to end with, and that's kind of where we were at. We're almost finished with this segment, and we're about to move on to another segment for those who feel this segment may have gone on unreasonably for too long.
Shows that there was some sway to honor his credibility over everybody else in the whole courtroom. Lower court.
Everybody else. It sounded like all the witnesses, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Other than him.
Well, Officer Schoenfeld did testify that she could hear us. Either it was from a distance away or a block away, or half a block away, I think, or a quarter block away. But that didn't indicate. She never testified it was unreasonably disturbing. In fact, because she wanted to uphold her position that she couldn't give an opinion on that. Though why she had that position has never been clear to me. I want to thank you, Coral, for this interview, and thank you, Gary, for interviewing the interviewees, and that's all I've got.
I think we should end this interview with you interviewing yourself.
Yes, thank you, Robert, for interviewing all these people.
You always give a good interview, Robert.
Is this a menage a interview?
It is a menage a interview, yes.
And for those who are wondering what you're tuned to, it's the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. I'm alone in the studio. And the call-in number here, if you want to call in, is 427-3772. If you have any thoughts on anything you've heard, if you have any transistor, if you have a location for our transmitter, there we go. We're looking for one on the south side. I should say on the east side or on the west side or on the hills. We need a location. Give a call to the Free Radio Santa Cruz email. Make that voicemail. I'm getting a little tired here, folks, but I'm going to hang in there. And that's 427-4523, 427-4523.
We're talking with Tracy
Phillips
here on July 21st, about 5:30 at the Joe's Pizza. We actually did a very interesting conversation, which no one's going to hear because it didn't get recorded. But briefly, you've been here since, you've been playing the flute since age 10. You're an artist, you're a musician, you're a performer, you're a mom. And you're noticing changes in the last 20 years around street performing.
Yes. It's gotten to be a bit of a more hostile environment. I think over the years we've had to modify ourselves a lot. It used to be a lot of groups, you know, group participation, drums and group singing, and now I think the people that I perform with, I think we're one of the only people that seem to be able to get away with it for any period of time now, you know, having it's just you have to move like 10 squares away every 30 minutes or something like
that. Every hour you have to move 100 feet away according to the move along law. A rather unique law in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, considering that, I don't know, that we're an asset to the community, that tourism is an industry in Santa Cruz, you know, it would be nice to have some appreciation, I guess, from the authorities.
Now, I came upon you and you were sitting near Mandolin Mark and Jay, a well-known guitarist downtown. You may remember Jay said that he hasn't been hassled lately, that there hasn't been much police interference with street performers. What's your perspective?
Yeah, I don't feel like I've really been hassled. No, I mean, I'm...
Yet you've noticed a general, in the last decade, a tightening up of things?
Well... things aren't like they were, you know. I wouldn't necessarily blame the authorities or anybody. I mean, I was young and idealistic then, and it just seemed like the world was my oyster, downtown included, you know. Now it's not quite that way anymore.
In fact, you recently got a ticket for sitting in a forbidden zone near the levee.
That's what I'm really irate about. As a matter of fact, I saw, you know, a group of homeless people down in the park, and I thought, you know, I'm going to sit not with them, but like nearby, and I'm going to have a little snack, and then maybe I'm going to play a little bit by the water, you know, and maybe just kind of just lighten the mood a little bit, you know, bring some joy to a circle of vagrants, you know, hopefully. And so I was sitting down by the river in front of the lawn, on the riverfront next to the lawn, about
San Lorenzo benchlands you're thinking of, or are you thinking
actually down by the river. I was
actually in the forbidden zone where human beings are not allowed to go.
I was not aware of this. I'm
no large signs that there were cards.
That I'm a little bit nearsighted, but you know, what was later shown to me was about it was like a 6 by by 12 inch sign or something, and it was at, there was one of them. You know, it was not at all visible from my entry.
The path leading down to where you went?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was only about 10 feet from the actual grass. You know, it wasn't deep in there or anything. And when the officer approached me, I was surprised. I showed her my ID and then said that I didn't realize that it was a protected area. I mean, I'm a local. I grew up here. I've been hanging out in that park since I was a little girl. I grew up, you know, going to fairs down there and being able to sit by the river, you know, and
things ain't what they used to be.
Exactly. And I was so surprised when she pulled out her ticket book and I was like, you're going to give me a ticket? And then she said, yeah. I said, I didn't see a sign. And she said, there's one right there. I'll show you. And then there wasn't even one where she said there was. And I said, well, you do want to maybe not give me a ticket? Because obviously there isn't. And she was like, her partner said, no, there's one over there. You know, we'll still give you the ticket.
You got to rip to keep up here, you know.
And my roommate and I do river cleanup. We've been doing river cleanup for years, and we're part of a river cleanup committee. And
Save Our Shores.
It's just our own local one.
Take Back Santa Cruz.
Yeah. Well, it's just us really. But I mean, I've worked with the San Lorenzo River Cleanup Committee and various environmental groups on cleanup cowls.
Having been violating the sanctity of this area many times while doing cleanup.
Apparently, I'm really trampling on these ecosystems by entering them and removing the beer cans and cigarette butts that are part of this pristine environment, obviously.
These excuses don't carry much weight with me, sister.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, ecosystem trampler in my efforts to.
I will give you a card nonetheless, and you will if you see any more scofflaws engaging in this kind of destructive behavior of our whole civilization here in Santa Cruz, I expect you to phone the radio station or call me up and let me know just who's doing what to whom, particularly if it's a police officer administering disciplinary activity to a citizen with a club of some kind.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share my experience and speak my mind, and I plan to fight the ticket.
This is an individual at the end of the table. Is a man named Steve Plaich, who is a legal assistant. He isn't an attorney, but he can probably, you know, give you some tips if you'd like.
Great. I would love that.
He'll give you his phone number, and he can call him. And he's available on the Mondays at the Red Church for their 5:30 meal, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, totally.
We've been talking with
Tracy Phillip.
Thanks, Tracy. We're down Pacific Avenue, about 15-6 here in front of Marini's, and we're hearing the sound of a musical saw in the tradition of Tom Scribner. And two music-loving dogs are listening. Not at this time, but I'd be happy to interview you for free radio if you'd like to talk about your travels. Dogs are very interested in this musical sawing. And we have a small crowd of folks clustering around. And thank you for the sign.
Yeah, have a good one.
So here we are at the Red Church, and it's about 6:05. We're talking with
Lily.
And Lily, we're watching the sun drop. Well, it's not that low yet, actually, but you've got the story to tell?
Yeah, I do. Right? I don't know her name. I don't like her. But she was running her mouth and couldn't stop telling everyone how somebody had given her fucking a disease. And so somebody started fighting her, and my friend tried to help her out. And she threw a shoe at her face and hit her. And
where was this?
On the levee.
How long ago are we talking?
About a week ago.
You were a witness to all this?
I was a witness to all this.
It still is in your mind. You're still upset about it.
Yeah, because I just saw her and I haven't seen her for a week.
And have you...
she's even there.
She's even inside while you're...
Yeah.
Are you... You don't feel... You feel you go inside if you want.
No, if I go inside, there's going to be something happening.
So you feel... You're so pissed that you don't even want to be in the same room with you.
No, I don't. Okay? She's tried out. She's got a fucking STD. And see if I can try to infect my road dog. She bit her and fucking almost bit through her flesh. And I don't appreciate that. At
okay.
all.
Okay. So... Anything other than this, I can imagine this particularly comes up because you see this person, but
mm-hmm.
anything else happening on the streets you want to bring up?
No.
Well, good luck with the situation. Hopefully it'll be resolved in a positive way. And
maybe she'll leave town.
And maybe you'll get a bite to eat as well.
Yeah.
Cool. We've been talking with
Lily.
Thanks, Lily.
So
we're here with a
Your voice anonymous?
Another questionable anonymous. Or is she anonymous? We'll see if people recognize who she is. What's your
show Friday?
Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's on Thursday at 6 o'clock.
6 p.m. You know what night?
It's 101.1, and we are talking to a smart meter opponent, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You don't have a smart meter with you to. No, of course not.
With me?
No, you might, you know, bring out the culprit and shake a little truth out of him. But so how long have you been an opponent of smart meters?
Well, ever since I knew about them.
How long ago was that?
A couple of months, I guess.
And who persuaded you that smart meters were not the way to go?
Well, I saw a flyer at a sauna tea shop about smart meters and how they have EMF, and I know all about EMF, so instantly I knew it was that.
Magnetic radiation?
Yeah, frequency. Yeah.
And you yourself, you're not a big cell phone user?
Exactly. I can't use a cell phone for more than a minute without getting a throbbing in my frontal part of my head and, like, ouch in the ears, like, my ears hurt.
And when was the last time you actually used a cell phone?
Well, I use it occasionally for speakerphone really quick if I need to. So I'll borrow someone's cell phone. I say, do you have a speakerphone? Mm-hmm. And I hold it like this, and I make it under a 30-second phone call.
And you discovered this situation how long ago?
Ever since I used a Rife machine.
Which would have been
a couple years
Actually,
ago.
Really gotta be anonymous.
I know, right? I said the Rife machine. Anyway.
A what machine? I don't quite
A Rife machine.
What is a Rife machine?
We aren't going to talk too much about Rife machines.
No, I don't even know what it is. it's been a couple years since you
It'll
discovered.
Destroy cancer in your body.
Oh, this is not an orgone box, perhaps.
What's an orgone box?
It's basically an electro. It sends electric signals through your body, and they specialize in certain frequencies that are known to restore health.
And you've been successful with this device?
Yeah, it can destroy pathogens and cure cancer.
You've had a particular personal experience where you've lost an illness that you had?
No, I've just used it for general well-being.
What happened was it sensitized me to EMS because unknowingly I'd poisoned myself using a cell phone. I used to chat on it for perhaps an hour occasionally. I stopped using it for some time, and then I used this Rife machine, and I became sensitized to the cell phone. And also when I was just had a baby and I was having hormonal fluctuation.
How long ago?
2 years ago. I used it, and it cured me of those baby blues, hormonal fluctuations.
They don't think it's good.
Okay, so now I see you have some petitions with you. Are you just working as
no,
a petitioner?
You're
a petitioner.
Yeah.
It's how you make a living. To some
exactly.
Extent.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about that as a sort of a side issue, because I know petitioners have had some problems in some places in Santa Cruz, like Trader Joe's.
Yeah, it's totally illegal, and that's exactly what I wanted to talk about with smart meters, is that there's a ban on smart meters in the county of unincorporated county of Santa Cruz. There's a ban, and the police aren't enforcing it. And that's the same with petitioning, is that these big corporations have enough power that whoever has the power or should be opposing them is not, and that's what Trader Joe's has done to the petitioning, because we're doing the work of the Constitution and we can go on anyone's property. It's outside of the laws of commerce.
Have you...
What she's referring to is the fact that Trader Joe's and other businesses apparently, but specifically Trader Joe's,
has banned solicitors, petitioners, and leafleters on the large parking lot that is between it and the river, which is quite a constriction of the First Amendment and what had previously been considered areas accessible to the public and a First Amendment protected.
Been told by Trader Joe's you can't be there?
No, I don't go there because I don't want to deal with the negativity. You know, it's hard enough to do my job. I'm not going to go there. I've heard that they will literally kick you out and call the cops.
And how long have you been a petitioner?
A couple months.
And is it enough to make a living yet?
It is. Yeah, it certainly is, but you have to work really hard at it.
How much money would you say make a day?
Well, I'm part-time, even less than part-time. So I'm not the breadwinner of the family. I'm just doing it. You know,
trinkets,
side
perhaps.
Jobs. Yeah, exactly. It depends on the campaign. You can get sometimes as much as $15 per signature, but sometimes as little as 60 cents.
How are the police treating you downtown? Are you outside?
Yeah, they know it's legal. Sometimes the yellow shirt, like, security people that walk up and down the hospitality, they don't know what you're doing, and so you can't hold a sign. But actually, as a petitioner, you're not selling anything, you're not asking for donations, you're doing the work of the Constitution. You can hold the sign, you can stand anywhere you want for as long as you want. So they don't know that, so they might try to say, oh, don't hold the sign, but then you can just say, well, I'm allowed to hold the sign.
You has that happened to you? You've been told not?
That happened to me. They said, you can't hold the sign, so I asked the person I work for if that was true, and he said, oh, no, they just didn't realize you can hold the sign.
And so did the same person come back to you and say, what are you doing with that sign?
I stopped holding the sign.
You abandon your constitutional rights?
It was for other reasons as well, because it was cumbersome to carry around, and, you know, so I just... And to be honest with you, like I said, it's hard enough doing the work that I'm doing, but to have to, like, constantly just, like, feel... There's certain things, though, that I would be willing to suffer something for instance, for the smart meters, because currently we have one, and as I understand it, there's no... It's not mandatory to have a smart meter. So, therefore, they should be removing it if you don't want to have it there. But instead, what they say is, once you have one and you try to say, oh, I don't want it, they say, oh, you can't... We're not going to remove it for you.
Now, have you actually tried to have a smart meter removed from an area?
No, but this is what I have heard from Joshua Hart, is that very few people have been effective at getting it removed. And so I thought, well, maybe I won't do that. And so I've been negotiating with my landlord about our next steps. And I was thinking to be systematic because, well, what I need to know is, what's the best approach? Because is it just because this company is so big and that's why we can't fight them right away? Would it go to court, this lawsuit, and then you lose because they have this money? I mean, what's going on? Why is it it's so fishy that it's totally illegal that they're installing these? But not only are they doing it, but they're refusing to remove it, and people that are getting sick from these are stuck with them.
We should tune in on Sunday, August 14th, when we're going to be having a debate between, or a discussion and an exploration of issues between Josh Hart and, as I said, yeah, Keith Gudger, who's a supporter of smart meters.
We actually did have that debate last Sunday, and you can listen to it. It's archived on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I should say it's archived on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and who knows, maybe it will be archived on the Free Radio Santa Cruz website.
And I'm going to try to ask him a number of questions. I mean, the quick answer to your question, which the supporters would might say, is something to the effect of, there is a county ordinance, but the Public Utilities Commission, the state Public Utilities Commission, makes the law on these issues, not the local ordinances, and therefore the local ordinances don't apply. Or possibly they would say, I've heard different things. The sheriff has too many other things to do. He's a busy man. Don't bother me.
Yeah, except that he's blocking protesters from PG&E's.
He's arresting protesters, actually.
Yeah, arresting protesters.
Who are engaging in the company that puts them in is calling trespassing.
So, right, so there you go. But so statewide, you're saying that since it's like the difference between the feds and the state, they can have their own laws, like between the state can have something that's legal and the feds say that's illegal, and then the feds trump the state, right? So that's happening with us?
For example, with medical marijuana,
yeah.
It's an interesting issue. I mean, in theory, theory, I think it's kind of different ways. In theory, the feds claim they trump it, but then they got to get to a local jury to get the, you know, to get a guilty verdict. And so, and often they do because they hornswoggle the jury and they into not listening to the so-called necessity defense, claiming they can't use it. And often medical marijuana is, you know, used by people who have life-threatening illnesses and do it to, so they can keep eating or to get rid of pain or deal with other problems of that sort. Well, yeah, I would encourage you and other people, assuming I play this tape in time, to tune in on Sunday the 14th to listen at 9:30 to an ongoing debate.
9:30?
9:30 on Free Radio Santa Cruz. So we're lurking on the back of the, what do we call this part of the Calvary Episcopal here?
Behind the Parish Hall.
Parish Hall. And talking with Joel Miller, who's been continuing Rene Curry's Monday evening meal. How long has it been going now?
About 3 years. It's 3 years in June.
And I know you were having some financial problems doing this for a while. You said you were kind of running low on funds or running low on food.
Well, a lot of the funds that we've gotten the last couple of years have not been forthcoming this year. The funds from the United Way and FEMA and the stimulus money. So we have about $6,000 or $7,000 less than we did last year. So we're trying to find ways to raise that money.
No more pheasant under glass here?
Yeah, we've cut that out of our menu.
Well, you also had some legal...
Sometimes we get free salmon from the second harvest, so we do have nice menus every once in a while.
I know you always have a meal of bagels, cream cheese, kind of a thick salad, some meat on the salad, strawberries, fruit, coffee.
Yeah, it's not bad, but it's not pheasant under glass either.
No, it's not. There's no chocolate in it. Oh, there's chocolate on the donuts on the table.
Some of them, yeah. The donuts are free. We have several volunteers who collect donuts. I can't even tell you where they collect them from, but I think it's Farrell's Donuts.
Probably the Smithsonian.
Right.
They're a couple days old, but again, you know, donuts, see, I ate half my donut today, which was a beginning.
That's all you could get down?
Well, picky. So the reason, of course, that I wanted to talk to you is to talk about the, you know, your apparent victory or, well, call it a victory. You have been pursued vigorously by the Cynthia Matthews No Meal for the Wretched group that has been trying to, shall we say, sanitize the church and teach you a good lesson.
Yes, it's kind of a mediated victory. I'm not sure I understand the consequences of it entirely, but one of the options I've had all along is to negotiate a sentence with the bishop. And a question I pose to the bishop is, what do you think I've done wrong? I don't get it. And you tell me what I've done wrong, and then tell me what appropriate punishment would be.
So in other words, and again, we're kind of jumping into the middle of this issue.